Wow, how about the results here? I have used the analogy so many times, you guys are probably sick of me saying it, about the football transfers, that K-State having so many early and the rest of the pack catching up late was very similar to the way that the election results came in on election night. You had the in-person votes indicating one thing, and then the mail-in balloting trickled in later, showing something else. We have another sterling example of that at work, and that is the poll that I put up yesterday about K-State moving the Stanford game from Manhattan to AT&T Stadium in Dallas. Because I asked, how do you feel about K-State moving this game? And I gave you the choices. You're all for it. You don't care either way, or go ahead and play the game in Manhattan. Like, I would much prefer to play the game in MHK. I don't know why I said it that way. Your choices were all for it, don't care either way, play the game in MHK. At the time we were talking on the air yesterday, it was like, I mean, there was like a 10% lead for play the game in Manhattan. And that was with about 700 or 800 votes. The final results clocked in at 1,599 votes. And first of all, really? We couldn't get to 1,600? One more person couldn't just click the button? Anyway, 44% of you are all for it. And 37% say play the game in MHK, with 19% at don't care either way. And frankly, I'm surprised that that number is as high as it is, because this is one of the most polarizing topics that I've seen in a long time as it relates to K-State sports. I do have a hunch that this can be affected by a younger skewing demo and younger skewing audience, because I feel like a lot of this does split along some generational lines. I don't think that's a hard and fast truth, but I think there are some generalities that can apply there, because I think what a lot of this comes down to is, like, if you are somebody that is older, you're more likely to have a tie into a Manhattan business, or just be more thinking of that more than a younger audience might be. So for those that are very staunchly in the, hey, don't take a home game away from local businesses camp, I think that is a factor there. I think even more so than that, one thing that I'm just sensing from gauging how fans have been talking about this, whether it is on social media or in person or people that have texted me or K-State online, is it seems like there is a crowd that's more just nostalgic for the good old days of college football and the good old days of K-State football. And if you're somebody that tends to have that sort of a sensibility, which skews older, then I think you're much more for, like, hey, let's have the high-profile non-conference games here at home. Like, I want to see that game at home, as opposed to going to a big, shiny, cool stadium in Dallas. And I will admit, I have some of both in me. I mean, you guys hear me wax poetic about Michael Bishop. I did that earlier this week. You guys hear me go on and on about the 1998 team all the time. I can talk to you about how awesome the glory days of K-State football were until the cows come home. Very appropriately, because as I was leaving work yesterday, I walked outside and it sounded like the cows were coming home right beside me, because it was that great smell, that waft of cow manure that you always get at 11 a.m. when you walk out to Bill Snyder Family Stadium for an early kickoff. So I have some of that in me. But I'm also a millennial, and I'm also somebody that's very much trying to be on the cutting edge of what's happening now and, like, how you do it in college football now. And this is a part of modernizing the program. This is a part of modernizing K-State football. We spoke with DY a bit about that in the first hour, but that was his comment as it relates to recruiting. Like, you had a really stale brand in 2018. And there are a lot of you out there who will complain, again, until the cows come home, about recruiting and where that's at, and that progress is not being made fast enough, even though the staff is clearly doing a markedly better job. But I can understand being frustrated and wanting to see more, and, like, hey, let's get this thing moving. Well, then do things like this. Do things like this. This sells better than playing Stanford at 11 a.m. at home. It just does. And those kinds of moves are going to have to be strategically made over the coming years, to repair the brand and image that K-State had that had grown so stale. And that's, again, where I come back to some of what I said yesterday, in that it's not about you, the fan, if you're talking about ultimate success for the program. It's not about catering all to what the fans want. It's about catering to what is going to bring players into the program, because then you win. And that's really what fans want. Winning fixes it all. Winning solves it all. So you're going to have to deal with some fan complaints if you take out some parking spots to build a much-needed indoor practice facility. And you're going to have to deal with some fan complaints if you take a home game and move it from Manhattan to AT&T Stadium in Dallas. But that can help push forward a very stale brand. It can help take away these like pieces of Wonder Bread that have just been left out on a counter for like 5 years that Chris Klieman inherited as far as his brand was concerned. It was that stale in 2018. And it's there's been progress made, but there's still a long way to go, and you still have to keep pushing it because it takes a while to really see those effects on the recruiting trail. That's not something that can happen overnight, and that's not something that happens just because of one move like this. But if you can strategically make a lot of these moves along the way, and if things do go well, which is another part of this, making sure that you fully capitalize on the opportunity. But if things do go well, now all of a sudden you're talking and you have things really rolling. You just have to get that snowball going downhill. I mean, it's still very much a snowball right now. Maybe palm size. You want to get that thing way bigger. You want to turn that into like a snow boulder. But it's rolling, and this is a push. This is a push down the hill. So I'm glad to see that the poll results are coming around, with 44% of people saying that they are all for it. Here's a nugget from Kellis, actually, that wasn't included in his story, and I didn't see it until just a minute ago. But he says, one more item of interest here. Arrowhead also made a push to host this game, but the money was better in Texas. Playing at the Big 12 championship game site was seen as a good opportunity as well. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I'm not shocked at all that the money was better in Dallas at Jerry World. And even if you took both of those and said, hey, the money will be the same at both, and some people will vehemently disagree with me on this. I'd rather play the game at Jerry World. Guys, we've done the Arrowhead thing. That just feels to me, again, like being fairly stale branding-wise. It's not as cool as playing at the most high-profile stadium. I mean, arguably in North American sports, certainly in football. You want to go play at Jerry World in a big, fertile recruiting base. And how many times did I hear when K-State was talking about who they were going to hire for head coach? You know, I heard all the time, like, Texas recruiting ties. How is he going to recruit Texas? How is he going to recruit Texas? There were so many of you in that camp. This is how you recruit better in Texas, by trying to do some things like this. So I would rather, if given the choice, I'm not saying this is, again, going to land you 4-star recruits out of the Dallas area tomorrow, but it's better than playing a game in Kansas City. I just think there's more benefit to it. There's more to gain. Not shocked that the money was better there, and I would prefer it to have been in Dallas anyway, quite honestly. It just, like, a part of that too is, like, look at where, I mean, when was the last time has Arrowhead been hosting college football games? I mean, I know they were doing they'd have, like, Northwest Missouri State and Pitt State there for a while. Kansas, Missouri obviously hasn't been played there in a long time. The teams like LSU and Alabama, these high-profile brands, they go to Arlington. They go play at Jerry World. It's what you do if you are a heavy hitter in college football. So I would rather ride along those coattails than go back to playing at Arrowhead. I mean, I understand why you'd be open and listening to Arrowhead, and I get that it's an easier, cheaper trip for a lot of fans. But again, this isn't... no offense, but it's not about the fans. It's about what's best for the athletic department and the program, because that's who they are looking out for. And if it all creates a better product, in the end, it's better for the fans anyway, and everybody wins. And that's a part of the bigger picture view here, too, which can relate back to the business interests of a lot of local Manhattan businesses that profit off of K-State football and need K-State football to survive. A rising tide lifts all boats. So come along, anybody and everybody that's on there. If the program continues to make a push because of things like this, we'll all be better for it. So I honestly surprised, still just reacting to that, surprised that Arrowhead is still in the business of getting into that. I guess there's probably not a whole lot to lose from their standpoint on that. And I have no idea like what the financial breakdown would be of that and like how much money Arrowhead would stand to make by doing something like that. I guess I'm just surprised that they would see it as something that would be financially viable enough to really be worth it to them. Then again, I'm honestly surprised that Jerry World thinks that it's financially viable enough to bring K-State Stanford in, that they would pay K-State $2.8 million. But again, I'm a mere radio jabroni with a communications degree. I have no idea what the financials would actually tell you about that. But I am surprised. We'll take it. K-State will definitely take it. All right, Max Olson from The Athletic is scheduled to join us coming up here. I want to talk to him about a lot of things. He covers college football at large, really, for The Athletic, but he's a Midwest guy, and he does a lot of work covering the Big 12 and hosts The Athletic's Big 12 College Football Podcast. I want to talk to him about Iowa State and Oklahoma, how much hype will be there, and what's the second tier in the Big 12 next year, coming up next. All right, back on the game. John Kurtz with you here. Stephen Schaefer filling in for Mitch Fortner today. Joined right now by Max Olson, national college football reporter from The Athletic, also the host of The Athletic's Big 12 college football podcast, One True Pod. Always enjoy listening to him there and appreciate the time as always in joining me here, Max. I'm going to start you here. This may be a bit of a curveball, but it's been the topic of conversation around here and a very polarizing one for the last couple of days. K-State is moving their game with Stanford next year that was scheduled to be in Manhattan to Arlington at AT&T Stadium. What is your take as somebody who covers college football on a national level? What is your take on the decision of K-State to do that?
Yeah, I can see why some fans would say, hey, was fired up to have tickets for that for a home game, and it's a bummer that it's relocating to Texas. I do wonder maybe if there's a larger trend here that we'll see, and that is that, you know, when you go play a neutral site game like this against Stanford, both teams get paid when you do that. And in this case, you know, if you bring Stanford in for a game next year, then you're paying Stanford to do that, right? So I think when you consider where these athletic departments all are across the country in trying to, deal with their budget issues for this year and plan ahead for next year, and, you know, we've already seen all the cuts and layoffs, all that's had to happen. I do wonder if that's just sort of from a financial standpoint, the motivation there sort of makes sense.
Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see that becoming more of a trend in the aftermath of COVID. I think that's a great point. Max Olson talking with us from The Athletic. So you covered the national championship game. We all saw that earlier this week, and it seemed like everybody now wants to discuss a lack of parity problem in college football and the fact that you have so many national championships and playoff appearances right now by three or four teams up at the top, the upper crust of college football. Are the concerns that people have about that as legitimate as many would lead you to believe, as loud as some people are really shouting about it right now?
It's a good question. I personally would love to see an 18 playoff. I know it doesn't solve all the problems of college football by any means. And honestly, I think we would still end up seeing these same programs playing for national championships at the end of those playoffs. So I think that's actually like one thing that in favor of it for me is I don't think it screws up the end of the season there. The best teams are still going to win those games, but I do think that, I would hope to see these commissioners of the Power Five League start to, recognize that there is some legitimate frustration there, and that, you know, maybe that's the more equitable thing to do, to have automatic bids for conference champions and let more people into the party here at the end. Because, I think you do see there's a little bit of apathy. As great as, I mean, I thought the Alabama-Ohio State game was terrific to watch, but I can see why some people who are just tired of seeing the same 3, 4, 5 teams, would maybe start to tune it out.
On a Big 12 level, it seems to me that there is going to be a lot of hype about Oklahoma and about Iowa State, who you can find in just about every single way too early preseason top 25 that's been released in the last week. I mean, how loud is the noise going to be about those two teams, and are they just clearly a cut above the rest of the league heading into next year?
Yeah, it's always a hard exercise to do that, you know, at the beginning of January, try and pick out that top 25. And I think generally at this point, at the very start of the offseason here, you're just kind of going by players who are returning. And so it's going to be a wacky offseason with a lot of transfers and changes and stuff like that. But right now, you look at those two teams and you feel like they've just got a ton of dudes back. I mean, I would say it's going to have, I think, like 20-plus starters returning from that team, only losing Jaquan Bailey and a couple guys. So that ability to just run it back with those players that now have all this experience and have clearly shown how good they can be when they put it all together, I think makes for, you know, pretty realistic to say Iowa State has the upside of a top 10 team next year. And then Oklahoma, I mean, I'm sure the Florida game, boosts that kind of perception quite a bit, but I think the way they finished out the season after the two losses early on in Big 12 play, really, really impressive. I think Rattler is obviously on his way to being one of the best quarterbacks in the country. And, I think if they can kind of keep things together there, I mean, they are losing some guys to the draft, obviously, but I think there's enough there that it certainly makes sense that they would be hyped up as potentially a top five team. And I've seen them, you know, as high as two or three.
Max Olson from The Athletic joining me right now. On the Iowa State front, man, what is it going to take to get Matt Campbell away from Ames? Right now it seems like he's pretty content with staying in his spot, and I'm not sure that I can really blame him for turning down, say, the New York Jets job, but do you feel like he's somebody that is going to wind up sticking at Iowa State for a long time?
Yeah, it's really hard to say. I think everybody kind of wonders, what exactly is he looking for? What would that offer have to be that would really compel him to want to make a change? And I think it would have to be kind of a perfect situation because he just genuinely does love the life he has in Ames, Iowa. And he's, you know, everyone I've ever talked to at Iowa State says that, you know, this is not a guy who's really like motivated by money at all. So to for an NFL organization to come into the picture and say, hey, we can offer you all this and that, I don't really think that wows him all that much. And I'm sure there are a bunch of NFL teams that reached out and want to interview him and want to, kind of crack the door open there a little bit. But I think the list of places that could lure Matt Campbell is probably extremely small and maybe even smaller than we think. And, he's a native Ohio guy. I think we know Ohio State's not opening up anytime soon unless Ryan Day goes to the NFL. So, I mean, I don't know what jobs are out there that could convince him that he's got a better offer. And look, there's been jobs that are considered more big time than Iowa State. I think Tennessee's a good example that have offered him positions before, Florida State, and he's just not interested. He just doesn't think those jobs are that much better than what he's got. So his kind of rubric for that is different from everybody else.
Well, speaking of head coaching hires in the Big 12. Texas all of a sudden pulls the rug out from under Tom Herman. They go get Sark from Alabama, fresh off of the program for coaches that need to revitalize their career, spearheaded by Nick Saban. Is this a substantial upgrade in your eyes from what Texas had in Tom Herman?
A good way to put it. I think when it first happened, I would say my perception of it was more kind of like surprised and oh, I don't know, almost slightly like lukewarm about the idea of Sarkisian being the hire. I thought it was clearly time for Texas to move on from Tom Herman. I just think once they decided to go after Urban Meyer, there was really no fixing that situation. It would have just been a wasted year, I think, in 2021, where he would have been a lame duck who was really not able to recruit or get a whole lot better. So it made sense that they pulled the plug on it. I think the Sarkisian hire is really interesting, though. The fact is Texas is not, they're not rebuilding. I mean, this was still a top 20 team that went 7-3, and I think they look at him as just a guy that has been at the places where he knows kind of how to take that next step. And I think the staff he puts together is the number one thing for me, and so far he's off to a really good start, and there's reportedly like off to an incredible start. So we'll see how they finish that. I think that's a huge piece in sort of the full picture there of Texas getting better and not taking the big step back here. But I think so far he's off to a pretty good start.
Would you have them right now? And again, I know you addressed like how early it is, and it's tough to do this in January. But would you have them as the third best team in the Big 12 next year if you were forced to prognosticate on that right now?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was talking with Stuart Mandel about this when we were trying to figure out what Big 12 teams should be on his list. And, you know, I think he put Texas in kind of like the number 20 range. And we talked a little bit about, you know, does TCU and Oklahoma State, do those two kind of belong in that picture as well? And I think, it's kind of hard with these teams too. Oklahoma State's a team that we still don't really totally know who's coming back and who's leaving. So it's kind of hard to say right now, but those were kind of the ones we talked about, but I may be overlooking some programs right now too. I think it just depends on how many guys do go into this draft. And now we don't even know, the deadline for seniors going into the draft is not until March 1 now. So, I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see what these rosters look like by the end of spring ball here.
Yeah, unprecedented kind of offseason coming up here. Max, really appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the podcast. Keep up the great work at The Athletic, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Thanks.
All right, there's Max Olson, National College Football Reporter from The Athletic. Here's what we're going to do for the tease here. I've been told that there's a caller out there who wants to put me in my place about the K-State-Stanford game moving to AT&T Stadium. If said caller would like to call back, we've got one segment left here before I hand it over to Mitch for high school basketball, so 537-1350. Call in. If you don't, we're rolling with number one song of the day. So it's going to be one of those two things coming up next.
Along. Time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had my chance that I could make those people dance and maybe they'd be happy for a while. But February made me shiver. With every paper I deliver, bad news on the doorstep. I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride, but something touched me deep inside the day the music died.
Okay, so Mitch is trying to get me in trouble here, I feel like, with this song being the number one song of the day, because I know that this is a classic, and I also know, Mitch, if you're listening there down the line, that the cross-section of people that are upset about the Stanford game being moved away from Manhattan, and who I'm sure love this song from 1972 by Don McLean, that spent 4 weeks at number one, is pretty substantial. So I'm going to have to mind my P's and Q's here. It's fine. I'm aware of the song. I know the song. It's okay. This Don fellow. Mitch, is it McLean or McLean? McLean or McLean? All right, we have no Mitch. I'm on my own. He's an American singer-songwriter from New Rochelle, New York, in 2004, inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. 21 studio albums, 4 top 40s, 1 number 1. American Pie is the name of his second studio album, but conversely, only the second best thing ever named American Pie, of course, behind the classic, probably early 2000s, right? Comedy? American Pie, the name of his second studio album. The folk rock band reached number one on the Billboard 200. American Pie was originally inspired by the death of Buddy Holly. The day the music died is February 3rd, 1959, when Holly, Richie Valens, and the Big Bopper. Big Bopper. You know, shout out to the Big Bopper for actually, you know, putting some creativity into his name as opposed to you know, Buddy Holly, Richie Valens. Big Bopper's much more creative name there. Anyway, unfortunately, they were all killed in a plane crash after a concert. This guy wrote the song from his memories of that event. Dedicated to Buddy Holly was printed on the back of the album cover. Now, let me tell you, those of you that think I'm just the uncultured, ungrateful millennial here, I have been to the Buddy Holly Museum, all right? What do you know about the day the music died? I've been to the Buddy Holly Museum in Lubbock, Texas. Not totally by choice, but I've been there twice, actually. Twice! Twice I've been to the Buddy Holly Museum. Respect my opinion now on the day that the music died. Contrary to rumors, the plane that crashed was not named American Pie. Dwyer's Flying Service, which owned the craft, did not name their planes. So this guy made up the name. The opening verse of the song is about him at age 13 finding out Buddy Holly died when he looked at one of the newspapers on his paper route. Why didn't he just pull up Twitter? Many lines in the song reference someone in music or events that took place in the 60s. For example, the jester is Bob Dylan. Ha! Couldn't have planned it any better. Helter Skelter in a Summer Swelter. Oh, the Manson family's attack on Sharon Tate. Yeah, Helter Skelter. Boy, that's it. I tell you what, this is something you should not do if you want to sleep at night. But I watched a Manson documentary. That's been years ago, but I was real freaked out. Some weird dreams that night. But I heard about Helter Skelter. The quartet practiced in the park. It's a reference to the Beatles performing at Shea Stadium. And we sang... Dirges in the dark, the day the music died. The 60s peace marches. At 8 minutes and 33 seconds, this is the longest song to hit number one on the Hot 100. The single was split in two parts because the 45, I now know what that is because I got a record player for Christmas. The single was split in two parts because the 45 did not have enough room for the whole song on one side. The A side ran 411 and the B side was 431. How did you guys do that back in the day? Like, you had to flip over the damn thing just to listen to one song? I mean, if I've got a song I'm rocking, I'll just put it on double repeat on Spotify and I don't have to touch anything. It'll just play over and over again. The A side was 411, the B side was 431. How did people live? You had to flip the record to hear all of it. Disc jockeys usually played the album version at full length, which was to their benefit because it gave them time for a snack, a cigarette, or a bathroom break. Now that I like. That's a heady play by those DJs. Weird Al Yankovic did a parody of this song called The Saga Begins. It's about Star Wars The Phantom Menace, written from the point of Obi-Wan Kenobi. So, oh yeah, I've heard this. All right, so here's the sample lyric that Mitch gave me. Bye-bye, this here Anakin guy. Maybe Vader someday later, but now just a small fry. Ah, Weird Al. Yeah, I listened to a little bit of Weird Al back in the day. Not proud of it. In the office, of course we have an office reference. The episode Chair Model from Season 4. Michael is infatuated with a model from an office supply catalog. When he finds out she died, he and Dwight sing a version with the lyrics, Bye-bye, Mrs. Chair Model Lady, at her grave. It doesn't really even rhyme. I just faintly remember that episode. Faintly remember that. I'm going to have to... That may be one that gets me to go watch that tonight if I can find it on, I don't know, Peacock, wherever. I guess I'd probably have to buy some new streaming service to watch it, so maybe not, but... That's what we have, folks. That's the end of the notes. That's everything you need to know about the day the music died and American Pie. The second greatest creation ever named American Pie. Because if you really think that I'm going to give that honor to some guy named Don McLean over Stifler, you are out of your damn mind. Stifler wins. Stifler, number one. This song still isn't over. Have fun, Mitch. This will be the day that I die.